Radio Influence. The future is now.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. We're your weekly source for performance information. Listen, if you have any questions, comments, smart remarks, if you have an idea or a topic you'd like us to investigate, let us know. We've dedicated segments, even entire episodes, to ideas sent to us through the mailbag. Get to us at crushperformance.com is the website. Info at crushperformance is the email. On Twitter, you can follow me at Jeff Crush, and on all the social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, and our YouTube channel. Check it out. We've got some great animations there. We're going to start a video series, little Crush Report videos we're going to start working on here this fall. It's been a lot of fun. You can plug in Crush Performance to search all of those, and give us a follow. Again, go to crushperformance.com. Sign up for our newsletter. We're just helping people connect with the world of performance and all the great information out there. And you can also sign up and subscribe to our podcast. We're on virtually every platform you can imagine. Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play now, you name it, we're on it. So please subscribe and give us your feedback. It's always, always appreciated. Hey, coming off a very great show last week, we had our good friend Josh Hortmeyer on, mental performance consultant, talking about the transition of athletes. A lot of great comments there, a lot of great feedback from everybody. And the question of the day last week was, what are some of the hurdles athletes face as they move up the performance ladder? And there were some really insightful comments there on the text line, also through Twitter and through email as well. And a couple of them that I would like to just sort of mention here again, was in regards to the hurdles and things that athletes now face today, was the social media scrutiny. This is something that has never happened before in the world of sport performance. The new athletes have things that they have to deal with that athletes in the past never even dreamt of. And social media scrutiny is certainly one of them, not just personal accounts. So that's very, very important. And I think for the most part, well, no, you can't say that. I was going to mention, for the most part, athletes get it, organizations get it, but we're still seeing massive, massive mistakes being made on personal email and social media accounts. So that's not necessarily true. That's an evil unto itself. But in terms of the media as well, and never being out of the spotlight, every single bar you go to, every restaurant you go to, there's somebody with a phone, with a social media hookup, posting pictures or videos of what you're doing. And we saw the notorious videos with Michael Phelps that really sort of tarnished his legacy and what he really stands for in the world of sport at the party. And we've seen it with numerous other athletes. That's just a scrutiny that you have to be very, very aware of as an athlete in today's world. So that's one a good point that I thought came up. The other one came in via the email info@crushperformance.com. Identifying who is an expert. And this is such an important one. We've talked about this on the show before, but being able to decide when you are putting and entrusting your development, your future, your health and wellness, and your sport performance to so-called experts in the field, how do you know if they're truly experts? And my advice there was to do your homework, because this is such an important part of becoming an elite athlete, getting the right people around you and making sure they understand what your goals and objectives are. And more importantly, making sure you understand if they fit into your master plan. And it's not always the case. Just because somebody's working with pro athletes in hockey, football, baseball, soccer, it doesn't matter. Is that person right for you? You need to do your homework. You need to make sure that that person, one, has the right attitude, maybe the right approach, maybe the right program for what you think you need. And again, that's a tough one because, you know, we also mention this on the show all the time, and I've seen this with our athletes. You only know what you know. Interview them. sit down, interview them seriously, just like as if you were hiring somebody to watch your kids or run your business. Interview them and ask them hard questions, and also get references. Get references from them and call them. Follow up with references. And then last but not least, and this is not always a deal breaker, but I think it's very, very important. Make sure they have a knowledge base in the area of expertise, whether it's nutrition, psychology, whether it is sport performance, the strength and conditioning, the physiological side of things. All these areas are very, very critical in how you develop. And having a clear understanding is important. A degree doesn't necessarily mean understanding in performance, but it certainly helps in terms of legitimizing the professionals out there, and also getting an idea and asking outright for a resume and what certifications that people might have. In the strength and conditioning world, which is such a crazy industry, it really, really is, especially when it comes to general health, it is just so unregulated. There are health clubs out there and health experts that have taken weekend courses or 10-day courses that just, in my humble opinion, are not adequate for entrusting the health and wellness of people. You need somebody with a degree and a good, strong background, maybe an internship, and that's where those interviews come into play. But don't get caught up in the degrees. The certifications for me are a big one. For example, if you want to work in professional sport right now, if you want to work in Major League Baseball, the NFL, if you want to be a strength coach or performance coach in the NCAA, if you want to work at some of the major high school academies right now, you need to have certified strength and conditioning specialist certification from the National Strength and Conditioning Certification, or you don't get hired. There's a great example and one of the more powerful ones. Now, is that certification the equivalent to being an expert or making sure the person's an expert? No, but it is a difficult, difficult process to get that certification. And you do need a degree to get that certification. So that's a good example. We see the same in terms of nutrition. General dietitians don't necessarily understand sport performance nutrition. It's a different world and there's different strategies out there. So when you're looking for nutrition advice, make sure it's the right person. We see the same thing in the world of mental performance. And last week with our conversation with Josh Hoytmeyer, where we talked about transitions and transitions of athletes, that's a classic example. Josh is a young professional and he was awarded the Canadian Sports Psychology Association Young Professional of the Year. He's doing a lot of work around North America and in Canada, of course, but he's also one of the guys who came up through a high performance system. He worked his way through baseball and high performance baseball as high as he could possibly go. And then he made the decision that, okay, hold on. I know where I'm at in this world. I know where I'm at in baseball. I know what I'm going to be able to accomplish. And here's something that really interests me. He went on to get his degree and his certification, and he's one of the great young professionals in the business right now. And that's why we had him on last week. He did some really, really cool work in his master's degree in counseling psychology, looking at stress and coping as athletes transition into high school academies and beyond. I mean, there's applications there. But when it comes to identifying who's an expert, and again, such a great question. I got to thank that the listener for that email. I think that's just some sound advice for everybody out there. The other thing that was brought up last week in terms of some of the difficulties and some of the hardships athletes face as they transition into the higher levels of sport is the doping control in the supplement world. Now, listen, if there was an industry that is more unregulated than the supplement industry, I don't know what it is, because this is a scary, scary place for our athletes to navigate. And if you're not an athlete, just somebody out there looking at general health or a weekend warrior, you have to be careful as well, because the supplement world, and we're going to get to this in an upcoming show this fall as we get back into our war on sugar. The supplement world is just out of control. You need to look at supplements that come from reputable companies and that have either an informed choice or an NSF certification, an NSF certified for sport certification, at least to help ward off some of the contaminants, banned substance. And that's where today's athletes are now facing something that, you know, athletes in the past never had to face before. If you are going to school as a scholarship, or if you're working to a professional draft, if you're involved in a national team or an Olympic sport, if you're certainly playing any professional sport right now, you need to be aware of the doping. And one of the biggest issues facing athletes there is the supplement world. You know, we know that the athletes who will, you know, go out to the dark side or step over to the dark side, they're going to cheat. Cheaters are always going to be present. And those guys will probably get caught sooner or later. I mean, the testing's getting more advanced as the doping strategies and designer drugs are advancing as well. There's a war out there. It's the war on drugs. And if athletes are going to go to the dark side, they're going to go, they're probably going to get caught now. And it's probably going to be front page news. And that's one thing I think that's been a turn for the better. But it's something that athletes never had to face before. So that was another transition sort of issue that athletes moving up the ladder as they get into high performance sports are now facing. And I want to thank everybody for their contributions there, and Josh as well. But that show took an interesting twist. We got into the conversation of, hey, so, you know, we know that as athletes move up, what are some of the important influencers or factors that will determine whether an athlete or a high performer in music, academics, in business, it doesn't matter. Anywhere people are trying to achieve and get better, what are some of the influences in the environment or around an athlete or performer that are going to help them succeed? And that turned the conversation to our top priorities for human performance, the Crush Performance top priorities for taking your run at greatness. What are they? And I promised last week that we would spend more time, because we ran out of time last week. I promised that we would spend more time this week talking about those. If you've listened to the show before, you've heard them. I'm going to dive into them a little deeper today in the last part of the show. So stick around for that. We're going to review again our top priorities for human performance. This is going to have a sport twist, but I'm telling you, you can apply this in any endeavor where you have people trying to improve and get better. There's such a great crossover. And one of the things we talk about when we look at helping people achieve, whether it's organizational in terms of sport, business, academics, music, it doesn't matter from an organizational standpoint, is the importance of the environment we create. And one of the things we mentioned last week was the influence of environment for young performers as they develop, and getting into the right environment and creating the right environment and trying to control the environment you're in as you progress. And that's really important. And one of the ways to do that, as we talked about, is getting the right people around you. And I think you got to understand that you have more control over your environment and what's going on around you than you think. And it's critically, critically important that you step back and do that inventory once in a while, because there's nothing more influential than the people around you. People, people, people. It's a constant theme across every single arena of human performance, whether we're talking business, sport, academics, or just life in general. The people around you will have great influence. And sometimes we have to get in and make some hard decisions and cull the herd a little bit. We have to eliminate some of the people that are either holding you back, drawing you back, and making sure that we fill those voids with people that are going to help you progress. Caveat here, though, or the more difficult thing to understand here, is you don't always know what you need. And that's where having a few key people around you is critical for advice, to bounce ideas off, and to get perspective. And honestly, that's one of the things that drives this show. We are here to get you thinking about things that you need to think about. I've just been lucky in my career to be around some of the greatest people in human performance. And I have learned a lot. And I've also learned, I've got a ton more to learn. But what I have learned is you need good people around you, and good people steering you in the right direction. And then you also need the people who are going to allow you to go out there, explore, experiment, make mistakes, and learn in a safe environment. And that's some of the critical components of creating performance environments and becoming a top performer yourself. Coming up after this break, the surprising truth about what motivates us, the mismatch between what science knows and what we actually do in the world of human performance from an organizational standpoint. A very, very interesting conversation we had with Dan Pink. Coming up right after this on Crush Performance, everybody. Let's get motivated. Stick around. setting up a hot date, a night out with the gang, or maybe a work function, make it easy on yourself with Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is the place to go for great seats at a great price, and it's all backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all, and it's really easy. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use the promo code INFLUENCE for 10% off of your first purchase with Vivid Seats. Get your sport fix with NFL games, NCAA, no matter your game, use the Vivid Seats app to make it all happen. Or get to the hottest concerts and live events with the Vivid Seats app. You can sort by price or you can look for seats in the section or row of your choice. All new customers get 10% off of their first purchase. Go to the App Store or Google Play, download the Vivid Seats app and punch in the promo code INFLUENCE. Again, all new customers get 10% off of their first purchase. Go to the App Store or Google Play, download the Vivid Seats app and punch in the promo code INFLUENCE. Get out there and make some memories and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live events.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Kershaw here. Listen, hook up with us. CrushPerformance.com is the website. Subscribe to our newsletter. Subscribe to our podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush and on all the social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, and our YouTube channel, which we're having a lot of fun with. Just search out Crush Performance. So today we are getting into environment. What does it take to create a good environment, a performance environment? Now, whether you're in charge of the environment as a manager, coach, or administrator, or whether you're a performer, athlete, musician, student, employee looking to get into a good environment, what should you look for? What do you need in a performance environment? Well, when it comes to successful organizations and environments that allow people to tap into their potential, there are some very, very key elements that are missing more often than not. And one of those elements is motivation. Environments that motivate people to achieve, succeed, and maybe even push their limits to get to new levels, to help themselves, of course, but also to help the organization. And that is a key factor. What does it take to build one of those environments? What do you need to look for if you're stepping into an environment? Well, we reached out to Dan Pink, presenter and speaker. He has one of the most watched TED Talks, as a matter of fact. It's called The Puzzle of Motivation, a presentation that was spurred on by one of his works as an author. He has a number of great books that he's written over the years, and one that we're going to talk about today is Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. And we're going to have a good look at the mismatch between what science knows and what we typically do inside of our organizations. So let's get to it. Here's our conversation with Dan Pink. Dan, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
We've been very interested in your works. Your very recent book, To Sell Is Human, is fascinating. But I read Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. And of course, in the sporting world, we're always looking at ways to motivate people. And it's really interesting. But, you know, if we go back to A Whole New Mind, if we could start the conversation there, why right-brainers will rule the future. I thought this was a real interesting concept when you first came up with it. Let's start there and figure out maybe from there how this applies to everything that's going on in the world today.
That book makes an argument that in the workplace, the central abilities, the abilities that are most important are shifting. It used to be that the most important abilities were these kinds of spreadsheet abilities, very logical, linear, sequential kinds of abilities. But today, those abilities can be outsourced and those abilities can be automated. And so what we have to do now is the sorts of things that computers can't do faster and smart people overseas can't do cheaper. And that ends up being things like artistry, empathy, inventiveness, design, big picture thinking, that those kinds of things, which we can think of kind of sort of metaphorically as right brain abilities, end up being more valuable.
Very interesting. I think that's a human thing, all in all. This could apply to virtually everything we do in life, don't you think, Dan?
A lot of the things we do in life. If you think about, we've seen this, it's a very common pattern in history. So if you look at, say, the Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution basically automated muscle power. Okay, so a forklift can carry stuff a lot better, a lot heavier stuff, a lot better, a lot longer than you and I could on our own. Despite your incredible background in strength conditioning, a forklift is still going to outperform you, right?
Right.
So what's happening now is that certain kinds of software are automating certain cognitive processes, but they end up being the very kind of not simple, but very algorithmic, recipe, list-based kinds of things, whether it's basic accounting, even certain kinds of legal practice, even certain kinds of financial analysis. So just as we had to do things that fork, you know, we're not going to be able to beat a forklift at strength, we're not going to be able to beat a piece of software, an algorithm, at that kind of logical sequential reasoning. So what we have to do are things that software can't do, which at least right now ends up being more of these big picture, artistic, empathic things.
Interesting. We're talking with Dan Pink, author, speaker, and host of Crowd Control on the National Geographic Channel. You can check out all of Dan's information at danpink.com. Dan, I think it comes back to that idea you mentioned in Drive about this fixed-mindedness or fixedness, where people just can't seem to get out of what they've been doing to break into sort of this new approach and maybe even more efficient approach to what's going on right now or leading into the future. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I mean, here's the thing, you know, that's not necessarily means that people are dumb or lazy. What it means is that, you know, if I do something one way on a Wednesday, chances are I'm going to do it the exact same way on a Thursday. And so it's very hard sometimes to break those kinds of patterns. And when it comes to motivation, again, especially when we're motivating people on the job or in schools, or you know, as you have been talking about for a long time, you know, how do you motivate people on the baseball diamond or the basketball court or the hockey rink? We tend to think that the way to do it are these very controlling kinds of measures. Whether we punish the behavior we don't want, we reward the behavior we do want, and what 50 years of behavioral science tells us is that. Yeah, that's good for certain things, but it's actually not as great as we think it is. And what we're better off doing is focusing on a sense of autonomy, which is, you know, are you self-directed in how you're doing all this stuff? Focus on a sense of mastery. Are you constantly getting better at something that matters? And also on purpose. Do you know why you're doing it in the first place? And I guess the best line that somebody gave to me, and I think it applies with equal force to both business managers and baseball managers, you know, to coaches on the field, as well as, you know, bosses in the office, is that, you know, somebody said to me, thinking about hiring, it's like, if that person needs me to motivate them, then I don't want to hire them. And, you know, motivation isn't something that one person does to another. At its heart, it's something that we each do for ourselves.
We're talking with Dan Pink, author and co-host of Crowd Control and National Geographic Channel. Dan, that's very interesting, you know, because one thing that we're always trying to tap into is helping people understand how they can get to the next level. And you're right. You're so right. If we have to motivate them, it's almost an impossible task. Would you classify maybe motivation as one of those intangibles, one of those natural gifts that people can have? Or do you think it's a learned trait if we have them in the right environment, have your people in the right environment?
You mean in terms of being motivated or motivating others?
Well, maybe being motivated. Or do you think motivating others can lead to motivation? Does one lead to another, I guess, would be maybe the conversation to have.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, it's a really good, and it's a really important question, actually, because a lot of the decisions we make as teachers, as coaches, as parents, as bosses, ultimately come down to that question that you're asking. Which is, you know, what is human nature? Is human nature to be lazy and, you know, not really wanting to work, not really being interested in stuff, and therefore having to be controlled? Or is human nature to be active and engaged and actually seeking some self-direction? And my view of human nature is it's the second one. That is, human beings, by their nature, want to be autonomous and self-directed. And I say that not because, you know, I have some kind of fantasy about the nobility of human beings. It's because if you look at kids, that's how kids are. You know, that's how we are out of the box. You know, you're not going to find a two-year-old. I defy you to find a two-year-old who's not self-directed, curious, and engaged, or a four-year-old who's not self-directed, curious, and engaged. That's our nature. And I think that people, you know, learn some of the habits of compliance. They learn maybe to become dependent on control.
But I think our nature is to be autonomous and self-directed. That doesn't mean we're going to turn out that way. And so, you know, it's really a mix of both. But if you start as a teacher, a coach, a boss, a parent, whatever, with the premise that, yeah, you know what, most people actually do care. They want to do something worthwhile. They want to control their own lives. That's going to lead you down a path. It might take a little bit longer, but that ultimately is going to yield far better results.
Huh, very interesting, Dan. Do you think that the way we have sort of our businesses set up, let's walk into any business or the majority of businesses across North America, or in my world, almost every single sporting team from the little duffers right up to the professional guys, we might have it wrong here. There seems to be a massive disconnect to what we know about, you know, science and motivation and what we actually do here. And I guess that's one of the big messages in the book Drive.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is that because, you know, I've gotten a lot of feedback from coaches at both the collegiate here in the U.S. and even at the professional level who have read the book and who, you know, and who have tried to take some of its principles and put them in place. And, you know, whether it's, you know, a couple of NBA coaches, at least one that I know of, NFL program, not much in baseball actually, but, actually it's interesting now that I think about it. It's really, you know, a lot of basketball, in the NBA, and in, here in the States, at the collegiate level.
Yeah, it is interesting. And, you know, if we think about, you know, in pro sports, a lot of, you know, everybody sees the glamour of television. What people don't understand is the grind of the travel, the practice, the groundhog day. That there's not days of the week anymore. Hey, it's a practice day and it's a game day. That's kind of how it works. And so motivation becomes a really, really important factor, even at the highest levels of sport.
Absolutely. And, you know, and so why do they do, you know, so why do they do it? If you look at the really great athletes, and I don't know, we can stick with basketball for a second.
Sure.
Whether it is, you know, LeBron or Steph Curry or in his earlier days, Kobe Bryant. I think what fans don't see is just how much work these guys do.
Exactly.
To get good. If you only watch, you know, if you only watch those 44 minutes now or 48 minutes now of an NBA game, that's just a fraction of what these guys are doing. And, you know, you hear about like the really, really great players who are, you know, again, in basketball, who, you know, are staying after practice and saying, I'm going to hit 53 pointers before I go in and shower, or I'm going to take 50 additional free throws before I go in and shower, even though practice is officially over. And that's the sort of thing that's all about mastery, about, you know, how do you get a little bit better at something that really matters to you?
Hey, Dan, do you think that that has a lot to do with the environment that the coaches or the boss or the middle manager of a business downtown really provides for the workers? Because just think about these people who are working at a desk every day, answering phones or dealing with customers. That's a hard environment to actually practice in and to imagine, how do I get better at this job without any legitimate practice time? It's not like sport at all.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. And so, you know, and this is why, I mean, one of the things that's interesting about sports, in contrast to other kinds of things, and your example is a great one, is, you know, with sports, there is always feedback. You're playing for the Blue Jays, you're R.A. Dickey, and you pitch, and the ball is, you know, you throw a ball or a strike, all right? You're Jose Bautista, and, you know, you're having that bat. You either get on or you get out. And so, and one of the things that is very clear in the research on mastery is that mastery depends on feedback. The only way to get better at something is to get information on how you're doing. And I think one of the draws of sports, one reason that we play sports, even as amateurs, why would I go out and play pickup basketball? Why would I go out and play softball? It's not like I'm going to, you know, I mean, it's embarrassing in a way, you know, how bad I am. But why do I do it? Well, I do it because maybe today I can get a little bit better at this. And, you know, on a basketball court or on a baseball diamond, you get feedback all the time. And unfortunately, those people in offices, you know, often, you know, the way that they get feedback is with an annual performance review. So, you know, once a year, they get feedback on how they're doing. Imagine LeBron James getting feedback once a year, or you know, that guy Kane for the Chicago Blackhawks
sure.
getting feedback once a year.
Yep.
I mean, it's crazy. You'd say, what? That's not how it works.
It's interesting, you know, and this is sort of some maybe insights into these successful performance environments we see. We're talking with Dan Pink, author, speaker, and host of Crowd Control, a new series about human behavior on the National Geographic Channel. You can check Dan out at danpink.com. Dan, let's talk about this, you know, the performance environment. You know, maybe we get complacent, maybe we get caught up into the drudgery of the day, doing the same thing every single day. It's the same for everybody. It's sort of a human thing. What are some of the strategies you talk about in terms of, you know, keeping it fresh for people? You know, you talk about the three key elements: autonomy, mastery, and purpose. I think if somebody really went and deliberately worked those three elements into their environment, you would have so much more productivity and probably compliance that you'd be amazed.
Yeah, and there are, it's a good question. There are some interesting things that, say, you know, a manager or a teacher or even a coach can do. I mean, one of my favorites, let's talk about purpose, because purpose seems a little bit abstract to people.
Yeah.
But one of the things that comes out in the research in behavioral science is that, you know, explaining to people why they're doing something increases their performance. So if you have things like Adam Grant at the University of Pennsylvania has done some great research showing that if people who are, say, raising funds for a university scholarship fund, actually meet people who have received scholarships or even read letters from people who have received scholarships, they raise more money because they know why they're doing it. You know, they know why they're doing it in the first place. There's some great research out of Harvard showing that when cooks can actually see their customers in a cafeteria, that the quality of their food increases because, that's why I'm here. I'm here to satisfy that person. I'm here to, like, make that person's life better. So circling back to the question itself, if you're a manager or a coach, teacher, whatever, one of the simplest things you can do is just, you know, think about in a given week, have two fewer conversations about how to do something and two more conversations about why to do it. So, you know, because bosses and teachers and coaches love to say, here's how you do a quadratic equation. Here's how you make a sales call. Here's how you hit a fastball. You know, here's how you hit a cutter.
Sure.
And that's important. Okay, that's important. But it's sort of, you got to take a step back and say, okay, why are we doing it in the first place? Why does it matter that you learn a quadratic equation? Why does it matter that the sales call is successful? Why does it matter to you as an athlete that you're able to hit a cutter? And if you have two fewer conversations about how and two more about why, I think you'll see an uptick in performance. And as bosses, again, as bosses and teachers and coaches, we're just obsessed with the how, and we very rarely take a step back and say, okay, why are we doing this in the first place? What's the point of the exercise?
Dan Pink, very interesting stuff. If people want to get more information on you, it can go to danpink.com, author, speaker, and of course, host of the new TV series, Crowd Control. I wanted to ask you, how is that going for you? It's very, very interesting. It sounds like it's a smashing hit, you know, talking about human behavior. I love it.
Yeah, it's a fun show. What we do is we take problems and then, you know, things like jaywalking or people parking in disabled parking bays, and then try to solve the problem and put a solution in place, turn on our cameras, and see what happens. So trying to change behavior for the better, one person at a time.
Dan Pink, excellent work. Hey, we really appreciate your time today, and we'll look forward to talking to you in the future.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeff, for having me. I appreciate it.
There you have a fantastic conversation with Dan Pink, and enlightening. A lot of great information in that conversation. I hope you had your pen and paper out. If you didn't, you can always go back and get the podcast for sure. I've listened to this one a couple times and I always pick up something new. So, so important to get this kind of perspective once in a while. So I want to thank Dan Pink for that. Coming up after the break, as promised, I'm going to go through our top priorities for performance, and we'll have a look back on this conversation with Dan Pink. So stick around, everybody. More Crush Performance coming up right after this.
This is Jim Fannin, America's Zone Coach, and I'm excited about bringing my new podcast, The Jim Fannin Show, to RadioInfluence.com. Each week, we're going to talk about the zone and how this mindset can help you in all facets of your life. I'll give you all the tools you need to change your life and help guide you to become your genuine, authentic best self. With the only proven blueprint for attracting the zone mindset, I've helped transform millions of lives. In my 40 years of experience, I've coached CEOs and senior executives from 350 of the Fortune 500 companies in 50 different industries. I've coached professional athletes, Olympic gold medalists, Hall of Famers, all pros, all stars, entertainers, and so many more to help them gain the tools and techniques to create a life of simplicity, balance, and abundance. And now it's my privilege to bring these methods to you every week, along with some of my champion good friends as special guests. If you want to get in the zone in all you do, check out the Jim Fannin Show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at CrushPerformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Kershaw here. If you want to get in touch with us, info@crushperformance.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And in all social media platforms, just search out Crush Performance and we'll hook you up with our world, which is achieving top performance. If you have any questions, comments, smart remarks, reach out there. And again, if you have an idea or a topic you would like us to investigate, let us know. We've dedicated segments, even entire episodes, to ideas that have come to us through the social media and through the email as well. So let us know, and we will definitely look into it. And we answer every single message that we get. So if you need help, advice, not that I might have it, but I probably know somebody that can get us the answer. So let us know for sure. We're just here to help. And speaking of which, great conversation with Dan Pink. That was from a while ago, but the principles there are just undeniable. And I think unless we keep revisiting these types of conversations, we kind of lose focus. We get caught up in what's shiny and new and what we need to do now when we haven't quite taken care about or taken care of what we need to do in order to move ahead, to set the foundations for moving ahead. And I think this is a problem that I see in a lot of organizations in their approach to development and talent acquisition, and with a lot of individual performers as well, especially in sport now, where everybody wants to be good right now. Sometimes we take athletes, and I'm talking every single level, from our little duffers, entry-level performers who are just, you know, learning, right up to our pro guys. Sometimes we take massive steps back and we reconfigure and reestablish the foundation that can either lead to further greatness, continued greatness, or new heights of greatness. And it's something that's very, very difficult to do. And I guess, you know, if I think about it off the top of my head, the one great example that I can think of in today's era would be Tiger Woods. And again, despite all the garbage he's been through and battling back, and despite your opinion of him based on what he's done, let's just put all that aside. But at the time, in the early 2000s, he was by far, as we all know, one of the greatest golfers on the planet. And if you remember, there's been two times, I believe, that he took a step back to rebuild his swing. At one point, he changed his grip entirely. You know, they're constantly changing clubs for sure. But he changed coaches and changed his swing because he felt that if he just kept doing what he was doing, he was limiting his potential or his ability to move forward as a performer. And I thought that was pretty cool at the time. The best golfer in the world, without question, taking a step back, sacrificing right now performance, and actually he sacrificed, I think, 2 or 3 months of actual serious competition, maybe even longer, to rework his swing because he knew he could do more. He just couldn't do it where he was at right now. And this brings us to a saying that we have with our athletes all of the time. And listen closely and think about where you're at right now. Whatever you do, what got you here won't get you there. And this is one of the problems we have with elite performers. They're so cautious about change and doing something new that sometimes they're cutting themselves off from higher levels of performance. And I get that. I really, really do. Stepping into the abyss of the unknown and doing something that you haven't done before is a really scary thing, especially when you're earning your living and your world rankings and your professional contracts or your scholarship are all riding on your performance. And sometimes I see coaches really, really taking a reserved approach with high-performance athletes because they're afraid that if the changes don't work, they're going to catch the blame. And trust me, the blame falls somewhere. But listen, if you really map out a strategy that makes sense with little, maybe even no downside, maybe a sacrifice of a little bit of time, man, it's worth the adventure sometimes. It really, really, truly is. Now, this has to be well thought out, though. But again, what got you here won't get you there. And I've worked with professional athletes saying, well, no, this is what I've done my whole career. I don't want to change. I don't want to try something new. Excellent. I don't think any of those professional athletes really, truly achieved greatness. They just didn't achieve their true, true potential. I think we could have had more all-stars. Maybe gold medals instead of bronze or missing the podium. Maybe more college scholarships. Maybe longer, richer contracts, longer careers. I don't know. It's different for everybody. But unless you're willing to try those things that you haven't done before, how can you possibly move forward? And I'm just telling you, you have to understand what you're doing right for sure. But like Tiger, you also have to understand that if there's more left in that tank, you got to maybe sometimes go and get it at the maybe risk. And it's not even a risk. Maybe at the with the commitment of taking a step back for a little bit. One step back, two steps forward, two steps back, five steps forward. That's kind of the rhythm that we see here. So you can't be afraid. Again, what got you here will not get you there. And that's a common thread in human performance. Hey, listen, next week, I'm really excited about this as well as we continue sort of this look on talent development, skill acquisition, performance environments. We're going to go back to a conversation we had with Jeff Colvin, who is the author of a great book. And again, we have to revisit these concepts to set up the tone. And because it's fall, sports happening, everybody's getting back into it. This is just a great, great time to start rethinking our strategies moving forward. And this is one of the best conversations, I think, that we've had on the show. It's truly what the show's all about. We're going to go back to a conversation we had with Jeff Colvin, the author of the book, Talent is Overrated. What really separates world-class performers from everybody else? There are threads here. And the research and the conversation that we had with Jeff Colvin was fantastic. I want you to hear it. If you heard it once before, I want you to hear it again. Hopefully you have your pad and paper there. And man, what I'd love to hear from you, so maybe some of the takeaways from today's show with Dan Pink and next week with Jeff Colvin. Because I think, boy, there's so much more we can do if we get the right people around us, get in the right environment, and create that opportunity. And so much to talk about. That being said, last week, I promised that I would spend a little more time going over our top priorities for performance. Now, listen, when we first start consulting, Crush Performance, me and my partners and my team, when we start consulting with an organization, we really just take a reserve step in and sort of just review and peruse the landscape. What's going on right now? Where are we at right now? It's a real important skill to understand where you're at right now. And going back to the conversation we had with Dan Pink today and next week's conversation with Jeff Colvin, you'll see a common thread here. You need good people around you to give you feedback. Because it is very, very difficult to give yourself subjective and objective evaluation of you, where you're at, and your performances. It's very difficult to self-evaluate. It's a skill we work on with all of our performers. And as a sidebar, really quickly here, here's an example of this. At one of the high-performance academies that I consult with, it was really interesting. Going back, I'm kind of lucky because I get to go in for 10 days a week at a time, and I disappear for a couple months, and we set up the program, and I help out as much as I can. Then I get to come back and see the progress and evaluate and figure out next steps for what we should do moving forward. And I do that hopefully 3 to 4 times, ultimately 6 times a year, but 3 to 4 times a year at an academy. But this one academy was really, really interesting. Just a group of top, top performers, young high school age performers forging their way and sort of crafting their skills to create opportunity moving forward. And over the course of a year and a bit, I just noticed the coaches really focusing on certain things. And there was little progression, or the messaging would be very, very similar in season, off season, to nobody's fault. Nobody's fault at all. This was just my observation. So I sat down one day without anybody knowing, and I was doing my individual sort of meetings with the athletes. There was 21 of them at the time. And I asked them, okay, hey, listen, in your sport, if I were a scout sitting in the stands, what would I see? What would I see? What would I write down on the paper and report to my organization and my superiors if I was scouting you or recruiting you in your sport to the next level? What would I see are your strengths? And also, what would I identify as areas you need to work on to really, really push your performance forward? And out of the 21 athletes, how many of them do you think had really good, accurate depictions of where they're at and what their strengths and areas of potential were? Well, without the coaches knowing, I sat down with a roster and sat down with the coaches and asked each of them what they thought were the strengths and areas that we needed to work on with each athlete. And of course, with the coaching experience, just unbelievable coaches at this academy. With their experience and background, we're going with them 100% in terms of their ability to evaluate a player's strength and weaknesses. How many of the athletes do you think matched the evaluation of the coaches out of 21 high school age athletes that have a pretty darn good idea of what it's all about? How many of them matched what the coaches thought of them? What were your strengths? Hey, what are the areas you need to work on? Well, out of the 21 elite players, only two, one really, but two had a really close self-evaluation that matched what the coaches were thinking. And so this tells us two things. One, the athletes are terribly, terribly poor at evaluating their performances. And two, the organizationally, we haven't shared enough to let them really know and understand what needs to be worked on. So there were things to learn on both sides. What a great experiment that was, just for me sitting down, being curious, and then breaking through. And I'm just telling you, the sharing at this academy now is second to none in the world. And of course, the results speak for themselves. But the ability to self-evaluate is just so, so important. So when we sit down with an organization or an athlete, we really try to get a clear picture of where you're at right now. And with the time and resources available, where we can possibly go in the next unit of time, whatever that might be. Long-term planning leads to short-term planning. We like to point our compass and look big picture and then reverse engineer to where we are now so we can strategize how we're going to get there. And that's what I think everybody should do if you're trying to achieve your definition of greatness. And then we get into the nitty-gritty of it, okay? And when it comes to human performance, especially with our sporting academies and consulting, we have four priorities for human performance. First and foremost, and above all, rest, recovery, recuperation, okay? Everything that we do in our programs revolves around that unit of time on a 24-hour cycle. Now, we may stretch that out into a 7-day unit, a 3-day unit, but we try to break it down to every 24 hours so our athletes never make more than a 24-hour mistake, and that goes for everything that they do. So we evaluate how much time athletes have in a 24-hour cycle to really get quality rest. This includes school, part-time jobs, volunteer work, other endeavors like recreational endeavors. Are they playing in a band? Are they in a math group? Are they whatever it might be, anything that takes time and effort. Do they have a girlfriend? And that conversation, which is so, so important. And based on the amount of free time they have, we then start scheduling in the development time, whether that is the athlete development, strength and conditioning, movement, and all the things that go on there, or the player development, the technical, tactical, teamwork, skill development side of things. We only program the physical training when we have an idea of the quality rest, because the amount of rest dictates the volume and intensity of the work. It's one of the biggest missing links in the human performance world right now, and I just see it all the time everywhere. Okay, listen, Connor's giving me the hook here. We are out of time for today. I apologize. I get long-winded. I get fired up about this stuff. Priority number one, rest, recovery, recuperation. Inside of that, sleep. Next week, I will follow through on my promise, and we will finish our conversation on the top priorities, top crush performance priorities for achieving top performance. We'll finish that off, and I will not be long-winded. I guarantee you we'll get through that conversation along with our great interview with Jeff Golvin, author of Talent is Overrated. What exactly is talent all about? Stay tuned next week on Crush Performance. We'll talk to you then, everybody.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
This is a Leveling the Playing Field Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We have Kathy Burrows, who is the CEO, or as she likes to call herself, the Chief Energy Officer of Sold Out Seating.
I'm not a big fan of you got to make 100 calls, you got to make 120. I've had teams that I've worked with where or sales reps that have called me and told me, you know, they hit their goal before the season ended, they've exceeded their goal, and yet they were written up because they weren't making 100 calls a day. And I'm like, you need to get out of there, because there are teams that would covet you because you're more of a relationship builder. I know when I do training, I work with them on the four areas of relationship building, influencing, strategic, and executing that StrengthFinders has. And they quickly see some people are very geared to one-on-ones. Some people are geared to in groups. Some people are geared more to, I'm not comfortable in front of people. That's something we can work on. Some people are woo people that we're sticking them in an office, forcing them to make calls when they should be out in public, because that's where they're going to make their most sales. Trying to understand who our reps are really helps more as to helping them to be successful.
Leveling the Playing Field with Bobby Sue Doyle Hazard can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.